Welcome to How to Get on a Watchlist, the new podcast series from Encyclopedia Geopolitica. In each episode, we'll sit down with leading experts to discuss dangerous activities. From assassinations and airliner shootdowns, through to kidnappings and coups, we'll examine each of these threats through the lenses of both the dangerous actors seeking to conduct these operations and the agencies around the world seeking to stop them.
In the interest of operational security, certain tactical details will be omitted from these discussions. However, the cases and threats which we discuss here are very real.
I'm Lewis H. Bassant, the founder and co-editor of Encyclopedia Geopolitica. I'm a researcher in the field of intelligence and espionage with a PhD in intelligence studies from Loughborough University. I'm an adjunct professor in intelligence at Sciences Po Paris, and in my day job, I provide geopolitical analysis and security-focused intelligence to private sector corporations.
I'm Alexandra Shulkiewicz, a co-editor of Encyclopedia Geopolitica. I'm a multilingual security and intelligence professional with a master's in international security from Sciences Po Paris. I have served in both consulting and in-house roles focusing on threat monitoring, geopolitical intelligence, and security support to various public and private audiences.
So today we're discussing how to get rich selling fake drugs online. With pharma crime on the rise globally, we thought it was best to sit down with an expert on the topic. So today we're joined by Anne de Vaude. Anne is the global head of product security at one of the world's largest pharmaceutical firms. She spent 25 years in both the private sector and in France's customs enforcement agency, combating crimes such as smuggling and counterfeiting. Anne holds a master's in political science from the Institut d'Etudes Politiques in Bordeaux and a degree in crisis management from France's National Security and Justice College. So Anne, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Lewis. My pleasure to be with you today.
So the question we always like to ask our guests to start with is, how did you get into your line of work? It's a business not many people are familiar with. People may be surprised to know that this kind of job exists. So tell us, how did you find yourself doing this work?
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of a niche job. I have 25 experience in mitigating crime in both public custom enforcement and pharma industry. And I use my knowledge of law, political science, experience, but also humility. Because when you are working to fight against crime, you have really first to learn and understand the landscape. How I get on this job, first, I'm really passionate about fighting against various crime due to the severe impact for population and states. When I joined customs as superintendent, I spent 8 years at Roissy-Charles de Gaulle Airport, and my job was to manage teams in charge of detecting and disrupting narcotic importation, money laundering, counterfeit goods or smuggling. And this daily collaboration was law enforcement unit, airport, commercial operator, prosecutor was very exciting because when you start your day, you never know what will happen. So the job was to ensure efficient control at the border, but also to ensure business continuity because Roissy-Charles de Gaulle is almost 52 million of passengers per year. So fighting the bad guys in this high traffic was always a challenge. So I really learned a lot and it was very exciting job. But at the end, I was a little bit frustrated because at customs, you stop illicit business, mainly in transit. But I was not able to investigate at the source of the crime. And that's why I decided after 13 years within custom enforcement to consider a new career path in the private sector. The question was always, okay, who may be interested by my experience and by my background. So that's why I started to look, and I have identified that pharma company was starting to develop anti-counterfeit program. And I say, okay, I will knock at the door and check if they may be interested by my background. So in comparison with other countries, for example, US or UK, or it's quite common for military or ex-law enforcement to move in the private sector. In France, it's not so many developed yet. So it's always a challenge, but I think it's very good because it helped to open the mindset. So this is part of my experience. And I would recommend to the new generation to also consider how to move from public to private sector, because this is really a complementary and very interesting approach. And if I may now share some few maybe insights from my now private career experience, and that when you are working for the private company, you have to be solution oriented. And that's why now since 13 years, I learn a lot in working with all geography, all culture. And I have one tip: always take into consideration the geopolitical environment. Try to understand the landscape, which may really facilitate criminal activity, and analyze the data to find the best angle to address your case and obtain some result.
That is a really fascinating background, Anne, and really, really good advice as well for everybody looking at these different spheres that we're talking about in this podcast. So digging right in, when we talk about counterfeit medicines, what do we actually mean? What are these things that we're talking about here?
Alex, if you allow me, I would like maybe to start by explaining what is pharmaceutical crime, because counterfeit is one part of pharmaceutical crime. And today, the pharmaceutical crime cover different infringement and issue. And those criminal organizations, they are involved in multiple infringement, putting patient at risk. So maybe start, yes, with what is counterfeit medicine? What does it mean? Counterfeit medicine are related to fake products that are deliberately and fraudulently mislabeled genuine product identity, looking for genuine product. So they may contain wrong active ingredient or wrong dosage. And worse situation, they may also contain dangerous substance. And sometimes it's genuine product with fake packaging. But nevertheless, those products are counterfeit because they are fraudulently used trademark, brand name, and most important, and in many cases, no active ingredient putting patient at risk. In parallel of counterfeit medicine, there are also kind of complex legal definition, but is illicit diversion. And in some country, we identify diverted medicine. What are diverted medicine? It's usually genuine medicine, which are dedicated to some market, but identify in some other market. And what is the risk? You may consider that, oh, it's a genuine product. Usually it's dedicated for the Turkish market, but it's sold in Georgia. The issue is that it's a violation of contract, law or regulation. But most important, those products usually are not following the normal distribution channel, meaning that they may be adulterated due to cold chain disruption, or they are not properly transported. So anyway, there is also a risk for patient. And there is a third category that we identify in some country, for example, Latin America, with genuine but expired product, mean that they don't have any more active ingredient. They are expected to be destroyed, but they are not. They are relabeled, or we can consider that those products are adulterated, criminals really scratching the expiring date and changing to resell the product in the pharmacy. So counterfeit, illicit diversion, tampering, and theft are part of the pharmaceutical crime. And it is sometimes quite complex for patient or for authority to really identify and consider which type of infringement and what is the response according to the infringement.
So what type of medicines are we thinking about when we think about these kind of problems? What types of medicines are impacted by counterfeiting? Is this just something we see in the kind of, let's call them luxury medicines field, such as things like weight loss drugs, or are we seeing other medicines impacted? I'm thinking more about the kind of essential core medicines.
unfortunately, all therapeutical areas are concerned. Potentially the first type of medicine which are counterfeit are what we call prescription medicine, such as antibiotics, painkiller, or life-saving products such as diabetes, oncology, and vaccines. Why they are counterfeit? Because those medicines are high-value medicine. And in a lot of countries, the health insurance system is different, meaning that part of the population has no health insurance system. So meaning that when they are suffering a disease, they have to buy their medicine. And because there is no robust health insurance system, they try to find those products on their own at a cheaper price. So this is one category of counterfeiter. But there are also some other category. For example, contact lenses, a lot of counterfeit. Why? Because it's very easy to resell on the market and very easy to produce. And there are also a lot of products without any prescription, which are today counterfeit. Low price medicine, such as vitamins, food supplements. But due to the large volume of consumer, it's also very profitable to counterfeit such type of medicine or product without any prescription. What is important, I think, is to highlight that this pharmaceutical crime now is a major challenge which affects, again, patient safety in every single country. And I would like just to share with you some recent data which have been collected by the Pharmaceutical Security Institute. Pharmaceutical Security Institute is an association of the main or the big 40 pharma company in the world. And we are sharing intelligence about this pharmaceutical crime risk. And just last year, we have identified almost plus 17% of counterfeit incident and plus 8% of diversion incident compared to 2021. Again, it's always the emerging part of the iceberg, but it's interesting to see that counterfeit is increasing and now injectable represent almost 25% of total counterfeit pharmaceutical product identified worldwide, both by authority or by the pharma industry. So it gave us some, some kind of trends to consider that today all therapeutical area may be concerned by those counterfeit. And if you consider always, if you ask, why those increasing issue? First, because it's a very profitable business. Counterfeit medicine generates more revenue compared to narcotic business. And do you know why? Two reasons. The volume of patient or consumer eager to get product is larger than the volume of potentially drug user or narcotic user. And then this is also because pharmaceutical crime today is not really, there is no real penalty against this crime because usually it's in some country, it's not criminal crime, but it's a civil crime. So as soon as this is a civil crime, the penalty are very limited. So that's why the traffickers consider that it's more interesting to involve in this business. Low risk and very good profit.
And Anne, you mentioned that price can drive people towards counterfeit, obviously. What does the price point look like there for these counterfeit medicines compared with kind of legitimate products? Maybe you can share a little bit both on like the production side, but then also on what the price point looks like for those buying it.
It's a very good question, Alex. First, if we consider the price for the patient or for the consumer, you have two situations. There are some counterfeit products which are offered at very low price to reach certain population which are in a bad situation or difficulty. And I'll just give you an example. In the Baja California region, you know that there are a lot of Mexican immigrants illegally entering and living in US. This population has no access to US medicine. So that's why when they need, for example, contraceptive treatment, or when they need oncology, they will find or look at some doctors who are really providing those counterfeit medicines for those population, because they don't have access to the US insurance system. So very low price. And there is a second category, which is with counterfeit medicine offer almost at the same price than the genuine one, just to reinforce patient trust. When patients in Europe or in US are looking for cosmetic, Botox or weight loss, if they see that the price is very low, they will have suspicion. Oh, is it really a genuine product or not? So they will prefer to order product at the same price. They don't know that it's counterfeit. So they are paying for a counterfeit product at the same price. Again, they are comfortable and they have the trust based on those price. So it's interesting to see the two trends. And regarding your question about the price for the manufacturing side, this is also an interesting trend, because some counterfeit organization, they are using some active ingredient in the counterfeit treatment because they need to provide a result for the patient. If you take the example of Viagra, if you produce counterfeit Viagra with no active ingredients, there is no result. So you will lose your consumer. So you have to put inside some active ingredient. The same for weight loss. So that's why counterfeit organization, they are really businessmen. There is a high demand. They will fit the demand, but they have to keep their consumer. So that's why they are really, you have different situation. Again, when we are looking about population in danger or, for example, migrants or so on, it's quite different because, of course, they don't have the capacity to complain against it. So they are using a medicine because they absolutely need a medicine. Whatever it's counterfeit or genuine, they need it. So this is a landscape of counterfeit organization today.
So that's interesting. So if I wanted to get into the counterfeiting business, if I wanted to become a counterfeiting cartel member or something, how would I go about doing this? What sort of equipment and supplies would I need?
It's a very good question, Lewis. But I will not disclose any details, too many details. But anyway, if you are a counterfeiter and you need to start your business, first, you need to get a genuine product or a product of reference that you will copy. Is it difficult to get this genuine product? Of course, not at all. You can buy a genuine box in a pharmacy and just copy the packaging and the blister and the leaflet. Or if it's a product under prescription, you can just look at the internet and look at the different presentation and again, use 3D machines or just printer to get it. So getting a product reference is not difficult. Then, do you need an active ingredient for counterfeit medicine? Not necessarily. As I explained, some counterfeiters, they are using expired product and just relabel it. Or they may also put water inside a vial vaccines, because as soon as it's a transparent liquid, nobody will make the difference between water and active ingredient. Or some other counterfeiters are using small active ingredient again to have minimum efficiency. So there is the two different situations. Then, do you need machine to produce counterfeit medicine? Yes and no. If you would like to do it at a large scale, of course, you need to buy those printing machine, embossing machine. And I was very surprised when I start my career to realize that there are some websites which are offering pharmaceutical machine for buying, even to some individuals or company who have no pharma license. So it was really, really for me impressive to see why there is so low control on it. But you can buy a machine. And this is something that we have, for example, identified in Middle East or in China. Then what is also important that if you start your counterfeit medicine, you have to find your client. It's like a business plan. So where you will find your clients? First, of course, on the internet and social media. And now a lot of people are connected to various Facebook group or marketplace, and you can use those digital channels to sell your counterfeit. But you may also use more parallel channel. And in some countries, again, where there is low regulation, there are some what we call street market, for example, in Africa, where you can buy a lot of medicine. There are open market. There are also some darknet or specific group where you can buy also your medicine. So the clients potentially are everywhere. And the worst situation is that there are also some pharmacist chain which may be also involved and selling at the same time genuine and counterfeit product. Again, the reason for this, in some countries, there is very low regulation. I just have an experience as well. And for example, in Africa, in a country where, according to the legislation, you are not obliged to be a pharmacist to open a pharmacy. So, of course, it may create, I think, a gap and facilitate infiltration of counterfeit. Or there are some countries which are allowing more than 150 distributors to import medicine. So if there is low regulation in the importation or in the distribution, it can also create some channel to distribute the counterfeit medicine. And it's a good transition because if you would like to sell your counterfeit medicine, you need distribution channel. How to carry on those counterfeit medicine? Multiple channels are used by counterfeiter networks today. If we are looking for intelligence and based on investigation which have been performed, usually this is always the same road than used by the drug dealers or narcotic organized crime. As soon as you have your channel open, you may export your counterfeit through container, large quantity, for example, between China and Middle East. You may also use small parcel because with the internet trafficking, customs are not able to control each individual parcel. So it's a second way to ship counterfeit. And there are also some more, I think, small situation, but some organizations are also using passenger carry-on in their luggage counterfeit medicine in some countries. And this is also another way to carry on. And then there is also some potentially other distribution channel that we are not completely aware of it, but I'm quite sure that organized crime, they are very creative in developing different way to distribute the counterfeit. And then as soon as you have your client, your distribution channel, you have to put in place financial system to get money and to organize money laundering. So what we see in the counterfeit medicine trafficking, there are different website or organization using Bitcoin for payment. So you are a client and you will pay by Bitcoin, or you may pay directly with cash on delivery. This is a method which is regularly used in emerging markets. And there is also a very interesting method for payment is the Hawala system.
We actually discussed this in last week's episode with a money laundering expert, Yaya Fanuzi. So this is very timely.
It is very interesting methodology again. It's quite unusual financial system, but very efficient if counterfeiter or counterfeit smuggler, they use Hawala to pay between two countries, those counterfeit network. They are using what they call reliable partner, and there is no money transfer. This is based on trust between people. And according to my knowledge, this is used in Middle East, but also in India, and it's really facilitate those trafficking, not only for medicine, but also to finance terrorism and different topic. And very funny to see that I heard and I was in contact with some authority in Europe, south of Europe, and they have dismantled counterfeit human hormone growth trafficking in Greece. And this criminal organization was using Hawala system to hide the profit of the medicine trafficking. So it was interesting to see that, again, creativity and the way to develop illicit business and to organize money laundering is really international.
And if you want to learn more about the Hawala system and money laundering, make sure you check out last week's episode, How to Launder Money with Yaya Fenoussi. So, Anne, you mentioned the business acumen kind of needed by those that operate in this space, you know, making sure they keep their customers sort of happy and keep their trust and having a business plan. What else do we know about these malicious actors? What do we know about these people? Do we know what their background is? Do we know if they have any kind of, you know, scientific background or training regarding the production of legitimate pharmaceuticals? And is there any overlap maybe between, you know, those trafficking counterfeit medicines and those trafficking other goods? Are these the same people?
When I start my career in the pharma sector, usually the individual involved in counterfeit medicine were really like kind of classical criminals, no specific scientist background. They were just involved in this counterfeit because it was part of the organized crime business. And it was mainly kind of small manufacturing facilities, not very professional way of producing and so on. It was more like a kind of a counterfeit in a garage or in small facilities. And since a few years now, we really saw an improvement in the counterfeit manufacturing production capacities. Some of the major counterfeit manufacturing are really impressive because now they are using high professional machines and they are using some manufacturing scientists to ensure that the product really look like the genuine one, that they have some active ingredients inside. So we definitely in the pharma sector saw this professionalism in counterfeit medicine. And the reason is because it's so profitable business that they have to be professional. And one of the issue with this professionalism is that even for the forensic laboratory managed by local health authority or by the pharma company, it's more and more difficult to detect the counterfeit evidence on the packaging or on the blisters because at the beginning, the mistakes were obvious, and now it's more and more difficult to track and trace. So we see this evolution in the criminal profile. And what is also, I think, recently new is also that counterfeit organizations, they are also using now people who are really professional, again, in money laundering, how to attract new patients, new consumer. So they have very nice website, look completely genuine one with doctors, with really a nice design where when you look at it, you definitely can trust. But unfortunately, they are a rogue website. But the design is very, very nice. So they have developed all those, I think, area to ensure that it's more and more difficult to track and trace.
And you also spoke about always being aware of geopolitics in the introduction as a context, you know, for pharma crime. Are there particular geographic trends in this whole thing, both in terms of where these fake products are actually manufactured and where they end up being sold?
When you ask to people, do you know where the counterfeit is coming from? A lot of people say, oh, China. This is real. Everything counterfeit is coming from China. It's a little bit more complex than this today. Geopolitics is a very important element in the pharma crime context. First, because counterfeiters are really starting to develop this business due to some geopolitical situation. For example, when there is a major inflation or economic collapse, or for example, like in Lebanon, when there were the explosion at the port. sales situations are creating really a major disruption in the normal life and the normal medicine delivery. So it's a pity, but those organized crime, they are using this geopolitical instability to reach patients who need treatment and who need medicine. If we also looking about geopolitics, the war situation, the impact on border closure or disruption, of course, has an impact again on medicine trafficking. Now we have identified increasing volume of counterfeit cases in Ukraine and even in Russia because patients have some difficulty to get medicine. As soon as there is a disruption, potentially organized crime will go and feed the demand by different way. Geopoliticals may be also a good driver in the improvement of the situation. We are discussing about China. The collaboration with China government has really been a game changer in the recent years following the big scandal. Maybe you remember it with the contaminated milk for babies. It was a huge scandal in China because it really impacted Chinese population. And this scandal started to raise really more attention from Chinese authorities, health authority and police. And now we get very good results in dismantling those pharmaceutical crime network because Chinese authorities are really looking at it to protect their population. And that's why geopolitical or crises or scandals may really have an impact on how we collaborate and how the pharmaceutical crime may be mitigated. The worrying situation that now there are a lot of geopolitical crises. Just to take another example, crisis in Venezuela has also really increased as a medicine trafficking. People have no access to food, no access to medicine. So again, the same issue, the same response. And in Latin America, there are a lot of patients suffering those counterfeit medicine trafficking because they have no more access. And that's why for me, geopolitics is very important. And as a pharma company or as law enforcement, it's very important always to understand the landscapes, what is changing, what is the real situation on the real time. Because if a border is closed, you have to look at it because it may have an impact on your product delivery.
Listening to you talk about, you know, how well designed some of these websites are, you know, it makes me wonder what the risks people are facing when they buy fake medicines. I'm always nervous about using my credit card online. So I'd imagine that these types of transactions have risks. Could you talk a little bit about that?
First, what is important to note that what happened today online? I usually explain that online fraud is increasing and covering different situations. If we are looking about a medicine online, we have various issues. We have some website offering product without any prescription, again, which is completely forbidden because when you are a patient suffering cancer, you cannot get an oncology medicine without prescription. But some websites are offering those products without any prescription and they are not authorized to do it. We have also some website selling counterfeit medicine, meaning that there is, again, using trademark counterfeit product content. And there is also a lot of websites which are really scam and fraud. You connect to the website, you order your medicine, you pay with your nice credit card, and you never receive the product because they are just here to get your money without any prescription. So that's why it's also important to educate patients and people that as soon as you try to get some medicine online, potentially you have two risks. You have one risk of getting a fake product or product without cold chain, so you put your safety at risk. And you have a second risk, which is a financial risk, because you may pay for a product that you will never receive. And I think it's very interesting to brief patient and consumer about it, because this is not only a potential risk, it's driven by concrete data. And it's nice to see that pharma company receive more and more complaints from patients, complaining, oh, I was on your website and I order a product and I never receive it. And say, sorry guys, but it was not our website. It's a fake website. So this is really also the new trends in the online medicine bad business. What we can also highlight potentially is that we have a significant growth in illegal wholesale medicine, because now the pharma company and the pharma industry have reinforced their detection capability. We have now some program to monitor what happened on social media, website and marketplace. And this is a recent activity that the company are doing, but which really help to better understand which type of risk and which type of product trafficking are online. We didn't get this information before, and it helped us to better figure out the concrete risk for patients again.
That's really fascinating. And we'll talk a little bit more about the mitigation side of things after the break. Digging a little bit more into this now, so you mentioned these physical risks to the patients taking the medicine. What are these potential risks that they face when they use something that is not genuine?
It's very, very frightening. Maybe you heard a recent article in, I think it was in Ireland, where a patient get paralyzed after buying a weight loss product from an unauthorized channel. And she spent 2 days with this as paralyzed. And the article was really frightening, because she was considering that the website was secure and it was not. And we have also some other evidence about the patient risk. Some journalists, but also some pharma company, are developing chemical analysis on those suspect products online. And those chemical analyses have identified that in a lot of counterfeit products sold online, some of them are containing starch or acid or contaminated vaccines. So this is really, again, based on forensic evidence, and patients must be aware about it, because they have no idea about the risk that they take when they are buying online. Some of them are naive, but a lot of patients are just unaware about the risk, because they consider that they don't have the idea about what those bad guys can really do it. And there is also some evidence provided by the World Health Organization. You know that WHO is monitoring falsified and substandard medicine, and they are doing a lot of survey. And they have identified that, notably in Africa, for example, the impact of counterfeit medicine on patients is the increasing resistance of disease, because the antibiotics are mainly counterfeit. So meaning that now there are less and less possibility to treat patients against those diseases, because they have developed this resistance. So the impact of counterfeit medicine may be really affect patients on the different geographical area. And when, for example, we are considering the counterfeit of anti-malaria treatment, there is no other option. If the patient has developed resistance, there is no alternative treatment for him or for her. So this is really also a long-term impact on counterfeit on population.
One thing I'm really curious about, hearing these different types of risks, which is the bigger deterrent to consumers? Is it the financial risk or the physical risk? I know it sounds like a stupid question, but I'm really curious.
I think it's not a stupid question, but if we consider the people mindset, I will say that financial risk is probably the bigger deterrent, because people are, again, they will be very upset. Don't receive any product when they bought on the counterfeit website or a rogue website. And that's why I'm considering to also push kind of shocking communication to patients, rather than to tell them, oh, are you aware that you are taking risk for your safety? A lot of people know that because it's a common message which has been spread since years by WHO, by a lot of institutions. If we started to say, are you aware that if you buy online, you will use money and that you or you will receive treatment without any active ingredients, so you will not lose weight or you will not have a nice recreative moment. I think it may be interesting to test, okay, what will be the impact for patients. I'm personally in favor of changing a little bit the communication. We have to also communicate according to the trigger situation for the population and for the society. I don't know if you share the same idea than me, but we have nothing to lose to be a little bit creative as well in our communication.
And apart from all of these risks to public health that we've been speaking about, are there any other impacts of this phenomenon? So say economic repercussions, for example. You also mentioned how this is something that's often concentrated in markets that do suffer economic disruption.
It's very difficult to get some clear data and figure about the economic repercussion. Nevertheless, there are different studies which have raised this economic effect. I would like just to share with you one concrete example that I managed during my career. It was in Africa, and there was a lot of counterfeit painkiller distributed in a hospital. It was injectable product. And it was so massively counterfeit that the business impact for the company was really high. They really lose money due to this counterfeit delivery in Africa. But what was the most funny element is that when the sales force went to the hospital to sell the genuine product, the healthcare professional told to them, no, it's not the real product. Your product is fake. Meaning that the counterfeiter succeeded in convincing the healthcare professional and the hospital that their product was the genuine one and that our product was the fake one. So the impact and the economic impact has been really high because first, the pharma company was losing money. Then the hospital suffering very bad situation because the counterfeit was 5 less doses compared to the genuine product. So it has created some disease and consequences for the patient safety. And then the issue was that at the end, because the volume of genuine product order for manufacturing was low, the time to recover and the time to reproduce the genuine product was a little bit long. So it's just to explain that economic repercussions are both for the state, because there is impact how to manage this resistance and how to manage those patients not able to be cared by the genuine product. Then there was also economic impact for the pharma company, and at least we may have the circle on it. So I think it's also interesting to consider the different perspective about the economic repercussion. And on a more strategic perspective, we also know that some states are also getting money through the counterfeit manufacturing and distribution. And it's not a surprise as well. So this is really a complex, again, situation, because if we would like to change this paradigm, it's long-term process, helping also the country to manufacture the genuine product in the country as well, and to reduce the impact of this counterfeit distribution network. But it's strategic and collaboration between the state, the pharma company, and the regulation authority as well.
Well, we're talking to pharma crime expert Anne DeVoe about the threat posed by counterfeit medicines. After the break, we'll discuss how to address this challenge.
You have been listening to How to Get on a Watch List, the podcast series from Encyclopedia Geopolitica. If you like this show, don't forget to check out our other content at Encyclopedia Geopolitica, which you can find at howtogetonawatchlist.com, where you can find our analysis on various geopolitical issues, as well as reading lists covering topics like those discussed in the podcast. Please also consider subscribing to the podcast on your streaming platform of choice, giving us a rating, and joining our Patreon.
And so now, looking at the mitigation side of things, how can consumers be certain that the medication that they have is actually genuine? And how can they tell that it's fake? And what do they need to do when they actually identify something that is, you know, a box of fake product?
So first question, how consumer can be certain that medicine are genuine? As I explained before, because it's more and more difficult to identify counterfeit, the best advice for the consumer is first, don't buy any medicine online. Go to your doctor and buy your medicine in legitimate pharmacy, because this is the most reliable process. For those patients who are still eager to buy online, because there are some region, US or Latin America or China, where it is very common to buy online vitamin and medicine, there is a tip which is check the list of authorized online pharmacy. And this list exists in the majority of countries. There is a portal usually hosted by health authority in the country with a list of authorized online pharmacy. And in Europe, there is a new regulation, which is called the Digital Service Act, where any patient in Europe can directly go on the website on the patient country and they can look about the list of authorized pharmacies. And this is something which is recent, but I think very useful for this. How can consumer tell if a medicine is fake? It's difficult, but there are also some good practices that anybody can implement. For example, when you buy your medicine, you can look about the box integrity. If there is any pre-cut already open, or if the glue is not really, or the pack is not really well sealed, it can be an indication that the product potentially is not the genuine one. So the best advice is that if patients have any doubt, they have to contact healthcare professional, go to the pharmacy, or directly call the pharma company call center. All pharma company, they have a website where patients may report if they have any doubt about how to use the medicine, or if they see any discrepancy or something different, they have to reach. And sometimes it's just patient may have some doubt because the packaging has changed due to new regulation or due to new sticker or to new logo. And that's why it's important for patient to report any information to be sure that they are using the genuine product. And this is a very important information because as a pharma company, we receive some nice and very useful information by some patient who knows their medicine. And when they report a discrepancy, usually it is a very reliable information because they know their treatment. And if they see a difference in the dose selector and so on, it's an indication for us that it is a counterfeit product. So we are using this information has a starting evidence for counterfeit.
So let's stay on that topic about how pharmaceutical companies are fighting this. How does that work? And one question that I'm always interested in is, do they cooperate on this?
First, the pharma company, they are almost victim of the pharmaceutical crime. And they cannot substitute to the law enforcement action. It's tough to say that, but the role of pharma company is, of course, to protect patient and to protect product. But with high popular product or high expected medicine, for example, new oncology treatment, those high demand create traffic. It was the case for Viagra a long time ago. It has been the case for COVID mask, where a lot of people would like to get COVID mask during COVID or weight loss product. So pharma company are victim, but as manufacturer, of course, we have obligation because it's our duty of care to protect patients. And it's also part of the corporate social responsibility to put in place some mitigation measures. So there are different, I think, mindset or company strategy. But the idea is to provide some mitigation approach. And let me just share some insight on it. Some companies are very quiet and they don't want to communicate about counterfeit issue because they are afraid for their reputation and they are afraid about a patient trust loss. Some of them are really more active in communicating what they are doing because they would like to increase patient trust and transparency. And usually those pharma companies, they have, for those who are open to communicate, they built some prevention strategy with three pillars. Detection, so they are detecting any risk coming from patient or healthcare professional reporting. They are monitoring online. Prevention, they are developing some security feature, for example, to protect their packaging. Or they are developing a awareness session for authorities. And some of them are also developing active mitigation response with intelligence, field investigation, and cooperation with law enforcement. So this is almost the three pillars which are implemented in the pharma company. What is important also to mention is that they cannot investigate every cases. So they have to develop risk assessment and intelligence to decide which action will be the most efficient. So it's always, again, collect information, analyze information, and assess which type of action may be implemented. And of course, cooperation between pharma company is existing. When we are speaking about fighting crime, we are not competitor. We are really sharing intelligence because it's always a matter of patient safety. So concretely, how it works, when we have information about some distributor or some individuals involved in counterfeit, we may share this information with some association, for example, PSI that I mentioned previously, to understand, do you know already this company? Did you already collect information on it? And it helps us then to decide the action plan and to motivate authorities to move on it, because usually, those criminal organizations, they are not only focusing on one brand or one company, but they are producing at the same time oncology, weight loss product, or diabetes treatments. Because again, they are doing profitable business. So cooperation between pharma is really one of the main, value if we would like to tackle this issue.
And keeping on this topic, so many of us involved in this show have intelligence roles or cover intelligence as part of our scopes. So I have to ask, given that what you've said about intelligence just there, you know, collecting the data and monitoring the geopolitical context, what is the role of intelligence in helping combat counterfeit medicines?
Crucial. And I think it's really a promising area for the new generation who are looking for a role in intelligence. Concretely, what is crucial, you can consider that fighting against pharma crime, it's like police and forensic mitigation approach. The analyst will collect information on company location, phone number, what are the batch, do we have already identified some counterfeit batch in different countries but referring to the same product or distribution. Connecting the dots is really important. And one of the challenges today is if we are, for example, looking about online information, with a multiple website offering the product, but behind those multiple websites, potentially registrant may be the same, or hidden organization may be the same, using the same phone number in different platforms, but at the end, this is the same organization. So how to collect and cluster information to move from online detection to offline investigation, this is really the challenge today. And we cannot do it this without any intelligence analyst able to connect information, to process in the right way, because if it's not in the properly in the database, there is no match. So this is really a different way to work. But I get that authority and pharma companies started to implement this. Some pharma company doing for a long time. Some of them is just new, but it's really a big value if we would like to tackle. And most important, the analyst will be able to present the information with a readable format for authorities, because we are using the same software. So it's perfectly easy for example, a Chinese or a Turkish authority to understand an intelligence mapping. No need for translation. There is connection between individuals, batch, product, phone number. So this is really the beauty of having intelligence on board.
So let's stay on this topic about kind of the common language between government and intelligence teams. What are governments and law enforcement agencies doing about pharma crime?
This is also a challenge. The situation is moving a little bit, but it's difficult. First, because fighting against counterfeit and pharmaceutical crime is not the priority of law enforcement agency. They are first focused on fighting against narcotic terrorism. But pharma crime, it's an additional role for them. So I think the first element. The second element is that usually the legislation against pharma crime is still incomplete. I also explained that the sentences are usually low compared to other crime. So again, when you have to manage some priorities, authorities are doing this. There are some progress, as I explained, for example, in China with authority or in US. You're probably aware about the major issue with fentanyl in US. Authorities are really putting a lot of efforts because it's very, very frightening situation, a lot of deaths. So authority commitments is changing based on the patient risk. But I think potentially the government and law enforcement agency cooperation, now they are more open to share with private sector compared to 10 years ago, because the situation has changed. And from each side, I think we understood that we cannot be efficient without collaboration. But concretely, how it works, that pharma company, we are spending effort in detecting and trying to collect evidence as much as possible. And when we have nice evidence and concrete file to share with authority, we go to this authority to present the case. And we try also to share this information for authority to investigate those individuals. Because what is interesting is to consider if those criminals are also involved in other crime. Counterfeit, of course, but maybe they are also involved in money laundering, tax fraud, terrorism. And as soon as we share this information with authority, they may develop intelligence and then having an interest of looking about our guys.
So what happens once a counterfeit factory is identified by the authorities or someone anyway? And what happens to the substances when they're seized? Are they destroyed? How do you go about that?
So usually when the counterfeit factory is identified, it's the result of long-term investigation started from a test purchase or for counterfeit evidence in a pharmacy. So it's a long-term process. The authorities are fully managing the case. And a lot of countries, the pharmaceutical companies, they don't need to lodge a complaint because authority are really responsible for as a seizure and for the prosecution. Yes, the substance are seized, put under seal because it's part of the chain of the custody. Sometimes, depending the country as well, the pharmaceutical company are authorized to get some samples for analysis in order to assess again the content of the product and the dangerosity. But it's really depending the local legislation. And then the product are usually destroyed, but after the prosecution. So what happened concretely? The counterfeit product may be stored in some warehouse, for example, for 2 years before the final court decision. So in some countries, we also have some cases where those seized product may be reinfiltrated in the licit supply chain or illicit supply chain. But usually this is properly managed. You have to be aware that there is specific destruction process for medicine because, again, there are some vials, there are different active ingredients and substance. So for some countries, it's also a challenge to properly destroy medicine or counterfeit medicine. So this is also part of the regulation, how to help those authority to put in place those regulation and to have the capacity to properly destroy the product. But usually we have not so many detail when a counterfeit factory is identified because it's a law enforcement and prosecutor action. So we have limited access, except if we lodge a complaint and if we can get some samples again.
So we're seeing a lot in the news these days about artificial intelligence and how much it's changing pretty much every field. How is the fight against pharma crime evolving as a result of AI?
I think it's really a starting process, but as soon as we are looking or improving the detection online, some company are currently using some robot or artificial intelligence to search for specific image through optical image recognition to identify, for example, a logo. So it can be a luxury logo or it can be the logo of a pharmaceutical company. And this artificial intelligence can help to detect, for example, that a website is using the same stock image to attract patients to sell counterfeit. So we had some improvement on it. The issue with pharma is that there are a lot of websites offering product without any prescription. So in this case, artificial intelligence is not able to help us because it's genuine product, photo of genuine packaging, and the bots are not able to recognize any suspicious. So what works for luxury, I think it's more difficult to implement when we are doing pharmaceutical online. But we have some discussion with some company to try to improve maybe the search by providing, for example, a counterfeit batch number. So they are also considering how they may help us in the future. But for me, it's an interesting area to develop, how to use the intelligence to supporting us.
That's really fascinating, Anne. Thank you for that. One question we'd like to ask all of our guests, you know, with everything that we've discussed now about pharma crime, in this field, what is it that keeps you up at night?
The first is to put my girl in jail because I really, I'm fascinating by thinking, okay, what I am doing every day can be just a drop in the ocean. But if it helps, again, to protect population, especially fragile population, against counterfeit and puts those bagel in jail, for me, it's okay. Because it's really fit with my value of, again, protecting nation, people. It's also a fun job because we are working with the world. Different culture. We are here to collect evidence. We have nice collaboration with a lot of different people. You never know what you will find. So there is strong commitment, but also fun. So this is good.
Well, Anne, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for your invitation.
You've been listening to How to Get on a Watchlist, where we've been discussing how to get rich selling fake drugs online with pharma crime expert Anne DeVoe. Our producer for this episode was Edwin Tran. And to our audience, as always, thank you for listening.
If you enjoyed this show, please consider checking out our other content at Encyclopedia Geopolitica. We'd also appreciate it if you could subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, or support us on Patreon. Thanks for listening.